I think a lot of people that have listened to the show for a number of years know that I say one of the things that I love most about it is I get to develop friendships and I get to spend time with people that I've just become very close to. And over a number of years, a gentleman sitting across from me who I got to know maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, and we kind of renew our friendship every couple of years, is Dom DiMaggio. And as I pointed out, part of the DiMaggio family, the brothers Vince and Joe, and it's been a couple of years. Dom, you look as dapper and as wonderful as ever. How are you doing, sir?
You haven't changed, Ron, since I saw you at our last golf tournament in Massachusetts.
The trouble was, I was smart enough not to play golf. I played tennis, and Geraldo Rivera was my partner in one of those matches. I remember that. He and I swapped little stories, and we took a lot of heat for that. Things going well for you, sir?
Everything's fine. I have no complaints. I'm living in Massachusetts, and I happen to be in San Francisco on business and some personal reasons. And that's why I'm here. I know I have been promising you that I was going to be on this station with you. I think it's going on 2 months now, approximately.
Yeah,
I made it.
We were looking forward to it. For those people around the country, where our facilities, our beautiful studios are located, and for Dom, who grew up in San Francisco, that has a lot of meaning, because you're only a block away from where you started your baseball career.
The young man who picked us up at the hotel and drove us over here drove by our Seal Stadium, the ballpark that I broke in with, in 1937. I shouldn't say that too loudly because it ages me. He was good enough to drive us all around the ballpark and by the brewery, which we used to smell. We used to smell the brewery when they were brewing there. And it was a great stadium. I'm sorry. I was sorry when it went. I still am today. I would have hoped that they could have done something to it and retained it, but we couldn't.
It was a simpler time, as I said in the outset of the show tonight. It was a time in which people... Tell me what baseball meant to people, not only here in San Francisco, but all around this country back in that time.
Baseball was the number one game back then. It really was the only game in town. When you come right down to it, football was in its infancy. Hockey and basketball were also. So we felt that baseball was the number one. I'd like to think that it still is. However, it's not the same. It is completely different from the years that I played, and I suppose it will continue to be different as the years go on. I would hope, though, that in view of what has happened in the last few years, that that is something that has gone by and will not be repeated. I am hoping that owners and players and perhaps a good commissioner can consolidate what has happened to baseball and to the people who love the game so much.
When I talk to players, Dom, about the way players look at the game, they lament the fact that they don't understand the history of the game, what it has meant to play this particular game. And I suppose that may be people that are talking from a different era. But let me just ask you a very candid question. You and the other players that played baseball for all those years, how did you look upon the game? Did you look at it as a game or did you look upon it as a business?
It was definitely not a business. We looked at the game of baseball as the American sport. We loved it. It was a privilege to play the game, in the major leagues especially. And as far as money was concerned, we did the best we could because we were in a position where we were not in the position that they are today. So we would battle with ownership to the best of our ability and finally arrive at a figure that everybody appeared to be happy with. On occasion, there would be a real solid, genuine holdout, but it wouldn't last much beyond opening day of the season. Again, I can only repeat that we could not, for example, be a free agent. It was not in the books at the time. So we were at the mercy of ownership, but we never, ever felt that it was a hindrance. We just loved the game. We had pride in playing it, loved doing it, and we loved putting on the entertainment for the people.
I've often said, having lived in this city for 18 years here in San Francisco, if I had a time machine, I'd like to go back into the 20s and the 30s in this city. Take me back to that particular time, growing up in the DiMaggio family. Talk about baseball, because this town turned out, Dr. Bobby Brown is another one, it has turned out an awful lot of good players on both sides of the bay. Talk about baseball and just growing up in the city of San Francisco.
Well, as kids, living in San Francisco, there was baseball all over the city. I assume it is still here. And we played sandlot ball with all the kids of our age at that time. Everybody had an ambition to be a professional baseball player, and especially a Major League Baseball player. That was our ultimate game, ultimate goal. And we played in these various parks, and we enjoyed it. And I happened to live right by a ballpark, and we'd spend as much time as possible, all of our free time out of school, at these playgrounds.
I know that the DiMaggio family was a working-class family. How did Mom and Dad DiMaggio feel about you guys playing baseball?
To begin with, Vince was the original entrant. That was Vince was the older of we three. There was Vince, and then Joe, and then myself. I'm the youngest. As a matter of fact, I'm the youngest of nine children, and we three were the last three children. Vince broke in to baseball. Before he broke into professional baseball, of course, we'd have spikes and gloves, and Dad felt that we were actually lazy and wasting our time going out and playing baseball. He thought that we should be out earning a living and working. Then when he realized that Vince went into professional baseball and was actually being played for playing this game, then, of course, he said, well, I didn't realize that that you could do this as a job and that they pay you for doing this. Well, then, of course, Joe came along. And when Joe came along and succeeded, Dad then felt, well, baseball is a great game. And then he got down to me, where I was so much smaller than my two brothers, and he would turn to me, he said, and would say, and when are you going to start playing baseball?
First time you walked into Seals Stadium here in San Francisco, you had a uniform on, you took the field, you played a professional baseball game. Tell me about what went through your mind, the feeling, because at that time, and I've talked to Duke Snider, I don't mean to digress here, but I remember talking to Duke Snider about going into Ebbets Field, and I asked him to give me a sight, sound, and smell tour of the stadium, what it was like. Tell me what it was like at Seals Stadium for you.
At Seals Stadium, when I broke in with San Francisco in 1937.
And then I want to take you. I want you to take me back to Fenway Park too. But let's go to Seal first.
Okay. Well, what happened back in 1937? How I entered professional baseball? I was working at the Simmons Bed Factory in North Beach. I entered a school that was being held by the combination of the Cincinnati Reds, who had scouts, and the San Francisco Seals, and we had anybody who wanted to go would have to report or write a letter or even make a telephone call and say they wanted to try out. That's how I actually first spent my time in Seal Stadium. I think there were 142 or 143 young people out there. Some really didn't justify being there from day one, but there were a lot of good ball players along with them. None of these kids were professionals, of course. This particular year, the San Francisco Seals had the first choice, and it was an alternate thing. The Reds would have, Cincinnati Reds would have choice 1 year for the first selection, and then they would alternate picks. The year that I happened to go into this school, the San Francisco Ball Club had first choice. Then they did choose me. Then they thought they would like to send me to Arizona, but my older brother said, after seeing Vince, the older brother, come back from Arizona, spending 1 year down there, who was bigger, much bigger than I was, Tom said to Mr. Graham, if Dom goes to Arizona, he may not come back. He may melt down there. He said, I don't think he should do that. And Mr. Graham agreed.
First time you went into Fenway Park, what were your thoughts?
Well, the first thing, of course, was that I wanted to be impressive. I wanted to impress, and I wanted to be signed to a major league contract. And I had a great amount of determination and desire. When they finally did sign me to a contract, this was a jump, Ron, that came right from the sandlots, out of the sandlots, into AAA baseball with a guy who wore glasses. This was absolutely unheard of. So I take a great deal of satisfaction in having broken in from the sandlots into AAA baseball wearing glasses. Now, that was a double challenge to me. So when you say, how did I feel about playing in Seal Stadium? I was determined to be successful, not only because I wanted to be, but because I had to wear glasses to do it.
Yeah, you were being challenged. Dom DiMaggio has joined us, and you, I may point out, a 7-time All-Star, and he also twice was part of a 300-hitting outfield. We're going to talk about his career in the major leagues with the Boston Red Sox, and we're going to let you jump in a little bit later on. Check the numbers, and Dom DiMaggio with you as we move across the country and around the world on the Armed Forces Radio Network on Sports Byline.